Hi, it's me, Hillary, your producer and host. Thank you for hitting play on this episode of Rashomon. If this is the first time you are listening, you should hit pause. Not now, in a few seconds. You should hit pause and go back and listen to season 3 from the beginning. It's a serialized story, so it won't make as much sense if you start listening from this episode. Okay, you can hit pause now. You're back. Welcome. Or you were already caught up before I gave that public service announcement, so welcome. All right, let's go. You are listening to Rashomon, a podcast where one family tells every side of the same story. This season, I, your producer and host, Hillary Ray, tell every side of my story, from the story I tell myself, to the story others tell about me, to the story that I want to tell you, dear listener. We're 3 chapters into my childhood memoir, Millicent Wimbleberry, The Early Years, and none of the stories written by my 10-year-old self feel like my stories. The Avocado Street story is one that was passed down by both of my parents. The tomato story comes from a photograph. And my story about Muffin and Pearl, aka Chipper and Digit, feels like a mixed medley of memory, photographs, and stories shared by my parents. But then I turn the page to chapter 4, and the story begins to feel like my own. I know there are parts of it that had to come from my mom's story, but most of it belongs to me. Sure, the names have been changed to protect the innocent, and there's a lot of drama and a tinge of murder mystery, but I do have a version of this story that lives outside of the pages of my 10-year-old book. More on that after I hit play on the audiobook. Chapter 4. Tweety, Our Beloved Bird. The biggest surprise on Millicent's 6th birthday was her new pet, a bird. She named it Tweety. Tweety was a finch, the most annoying-sounding bird on Earth. Millie loved Tweety and worshipped the air she flew in a 6-year-old sort of way. Tweety soon grew sick and had to be taken to a better place where she could relax and be alone. This place was a preschool. Gwendolyn took poor Tweety to the school she worked at. Millicent was depressed. She had Pearl and Muffin, but she loved Tweety so much and she couldn't stand to depart with her. Millicent threw a number of fits about her bird. She would lie on the floor, kicking and yelling in the most disturbing way. Millicent's parents compromised with her and said she could go along with Gwen to see how Tweety was. When they got to the preschool and took the bright blue cage down from its stand, Tweety just stayed in her furnished nest and moaned in a bird sort of way. Millie was very worried about her bird, but what she didn't know was that her worries would turn into hysterics once Mrs. Rue came. Tweety was going to die. When Millie looked at all the kids, she saw how excited they were. Gwen told Millicent that they were happy because Mrs. Rue was coming. Mrs. Rue was the preschool's music teacher. She always sang in French. It was funny to see the kids try to pronounce the words. It always sounded odd. A loud knock startled Millicent and the other kids. A large woman with the awful smell of under-the-sea perfume walked in. Some of the kids fainted because the smell was so strong. That could have been the way Tweety was killed, but Millie didn't think so. Mrs. Rue sat down at her keyboard and started to sing Alouette. The kids joined in and had a lot of fun. Millie loved to watch them sing. Then they started a song about a good finch named Joe who died when the fat lady sang. This was the first song Millie had heard Mrs. Rue sing in English. When the word finch was recited, Millicent decided to check on Tweety. Millie looked into the cage and saw Tweety lying on the bottom of her cage, not breathing. Tweety was dead. Millicent Hilda Wimbleberry charged at Mrs. Rue, screaming at the top of her lungs. The screams turned into sobs, and Millicent sat down at the keyboard and started to sing about a large woman named Mrs. Rue who died when the 6-year-old girl sang. Mrs. Rue keeled over. Gwendolyn called 911 and started to panic. Millicent just sat in the corner and smirked.
I don't have too many memories of the bird, of the finch, and some of this might be false memory, but I think we had two finches originally, and the cage that they were in was hanging in a window that looked out onto the yard that we shared with the preschool. You'd come up the stairs, and halfway up the stairs there'd be a big window and a windowsill that you could sit on, a window seat, and the cage was hanging from the top of the window. And I remember being, maybe this is my kind of anal nature, but I remember being annoyed that there would be sometimes bird poop on the windowsill on this nice piece of wood. And then indeed the birds, I don't know, singular or plural, were transferred over to the preschool next door and had a life and death, I guess, as well, next door at the preschool. So in terms of pets that we had, dogs, cats, goldfish, finches, the finches are the least memorable in my mind. I don't even remember their real names. I don't think it was Tweety. And that's about it.
My dad might not remember all of the details about the finch or finches, but in his list of our pets, he does remember the goldfish, Goldie. For some reason, my memory of Goldie is strong as well. So much so, I told a short story about he or she at a Tell Me a Story live show in September of 2013.
Before I had the finches, I had a goldfish, like Carolyn mentioned. I got her at a school fair. I was given 3 ping pong balls to try to get one into a bowl, and then I was given 3 more ping pong balls because I didn't get the other ones into a bowl, and then I think on my 12th ping pong ball, it like ricocheted off of the rim of one of the fish bowls, and they're like, "You won!" And instead of giving me the fish bowl, they gave me a goldfish in a Ziploc swimming pool, and I carried it home, and I was all excited, but I got it its own, very simple, glass, round, traditional fish bowl, no gravel, no plastic ferns, no like big tank bubbling with things, just a simple bowl that sat on my dresser, had a wonderful view out my window in my room, and this was Goldie, and the other kids at school had goldfish, and they would tell me, like, "Oh, my fish died," and I was like, "Oh, I still have mine," and like a year passed, and I still had my goldfish, and another year passed, and classmates of mine were like on their third goldfish, like the other ones had just been flushed down the toilet already, and I'm like, "Oh, I still have mine," and 6 years later, I still had Goldie, the goldfish, swimming in that bowl. And I, you know, I just like sort of used to Goldie there. Like every day I would wake up and be like, "Good morning, Goldie," and like all groggy, like go downstairs. And like, I think my dad fed it. I like, you know, didn't know how to feed a fish, I guess. I'm not sure. So like I woke up one morning and I was like, "Ugh, good morning, Goldie." And like didn't even look towards the bowl. And I like go downstairs and I'm sitting there and I'm eating toast and I hear the toilet flush, not thinking anything of it. And my dad comes downstairs and he seems like a little weird. He's like, "Oh, Hillary, did you see Goldie this morning?" And I was like, "Well, I said good morning." And then I realized I like didn't see Goldie this morning. And he's like, "Yeah, I found Goldie under your dresser." And I was like, "Oh." And he's like, "Hillary, your goldfish committed suicide." And I was like, "Oh." And he's like, "And I flushed it down the toilet because I didn't want you to have to see the body." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then like several years after that, that movie Amelie came out, and like one of the early scenes in the movie, her goldfish commits suicide, and then like they find it, and the mom like ends up throwing it into the water. But I just remember Amelie, the little Amelie, like looking and like screaming for like 2 minutes at her suicidal goldfish. And I was like, yes, Amelie, I know how you feel. And then from that point on, I was like, maybe the rest of my life will be just like Amelie. And that didn't really happen.
When Hillary was in preschool, she really wanted a pet. And this was before we got Chipper and Digit the cat. For her fourth birthday, her father and I gave her two finches. I don't remember what Hillary named them, but she was very happy to have them. And at first, everything was fine. But after a few months, one of the birds started viciously pecking the feathers off the other one. I decided to separate the birds, and I brought the one that was being attacked, and at this point quite bald, to Hillary's preschool. And the finch thrived being in its own cage, and the feathers began to grow back nicely. I think it was the next year Hillary started kindergarten in another school, and I began working in her preschool. One of the students that year spoke only French. Her father was French and her mother was American, but they spoke only French at home. One day, the mother came to school to teach the children a song in French called Mon Petit Oiseau, which translated is My Little Bird. The children learned the song really quickly and everyone was singing along. But when the singing stopped, Hillary's finch fell from its perch and died.
Tell Me a Story's live storytelling event was always built around a theme. And the night that I told the Goldie story, the theme was animals. As host, I shared very quick anecdotes between each storyteller, and that night they revolved around all of my pets. Looking back on this now, this is essentially what I did in Millicent Wimbleberry the early years. And my 10-year-old version of the Finch story is pretty much the same as my 31-year-old version of the Finch story.
My parents brought home two finches for me as pets, and I named them Candy and Cupcake. Finches are not pleasant pets to have. They make terrible noises, like, and there's two of them, and they fought all the time, so you would just hear over and over again. The only way we could get them to shut up is if we covered their cage, which they shared together, in a cloth, and then they would calm down and be quiet. So I feel like we had the cloth on the cage in my family a little bit more than we had it open to reveal Candy and Cupcake. But there was one night where their chirping, their tweeting got louder. One bird was really aggressive, the other was really desperate, and it just kept going on and on and on until it went totally quiet. And me and my mom went into the room where the cage was, and the cloth was still covered. And so we're like, that's really weird. How could they be making so much noise with the cloth covered? So my mom lifts it up to reveal Cupcake, who is totally naked, his feathers strewn on the ground of the cage, and Candy staring at him. Candy had pecked all of Cupcake's feathers out of him in some sort of domestic feud of some sort. I was horrified. I was like 4 years old when this happened. And so my mom separated them, put them in two cages, but I still kept them both as pets. But then they just sort of became even more boring than when they were in the cage together. And at one point, Cupcake, after having his feathers pecked entirely out of him, just couldn't handle life anymore and died. So I didn't really want Candy anymore. And my mom happened to work at a preschool, so she brought Candy to the preschool. And I sort of forgot about my former pet Finch. And every once in a while, my mom would just come home and be like, oh, Candy's doing great, Candy's fine. I'd be like, great. Until one night she came home and had a huge story to tell about Candy. At school that day, they had brought in a special guest French teacher to teach all of the wee little ones French, and They did basic things like learn how to count to 10 in French and learn how to say hello in French. But then she started to sing all of these French songs. And one of the songs that she taught the little kids was a song called Le Petit Oiseau, the small bird. And my mom got really excited and was like, let's show the French teacher our small bird and let's sing to it. So they went over to the cage where Candy lived now in the preschool, and all the preschool kids gathered around with the French teacher. My mom went to lift the cloth off so that they could serenade her with Le Petit Oiseau, and there she was, dead in the cage. Now, I think that the French teacher's first round of Le Petit Oiseau killed that bird, but the cloth was covered, so there was no witness.
In September 2013, I had no memory of Millicent Wimbleberry the early years, so I find it bizarre that my candy and cupcake stories surfaced. In 2009, I began to tell stories from my life on stage, in art galleries, comedy clubs, and story slam style events, and then 2 years later, the Tell Me a Story live show was born. At that time, as I was telling stories, I did not have a formal brainstorming process. An idea would come to mind, I'd test it out with friends, write it down, and try it out in front of an audience. As I brainstormed, as stories came to me, my memories went back only as far as age 10. There was an occasional early years story like the Finches, and the pet stories did continue. I had a story about my pet lizards, Kurt and Courtney. I got them at the Gallery Mall for a science project, and like my goldfish and my birds, they had a grim demise. And my lizard science project brings me back to all of my other science projects and the stories that I've shared. Science is a subject that, according to my book about me, was one of my favorites.
Okay. Later down on the page, very confusing, I say, I study many things. I like science and theme best. Theme was like in my hippy-dippy school, like when we learned like a specific topic and went in depth. I did like science. I made the Grand Canyon out of pancakes around this time as a project.
I agree with my book about me declaration, and my adult self can confirm that science was a favorite subject of mine through to the end of high school. There's a story that is still clear in my memory bank. It happened in middle school in science class, and I told a version of it in another Tell Me a Story live show from 2015.
I didn't realize that the entire time I was in school, my favorite subject was science. It was one of those things that I realized after the fact, after I left school. And I think I loved science so much, especially in my kindergarten through eighth grade school, is that every year we had a science project. And the earlier years, all the kids had to do the same project. So everyone had to do the leaf project, where we collected all different leaves. And then the next year, everyone had to do the rock project, and we had to go out and collect all different types of rocks. And then I was really excited when we were allowed to start our own projects. And the first one that I did was I wrote a book called What You Otter Know About Otters. For those that are unfamiliar, it was a book about otters. So I did that, and then we got to do projects with partners, which was really exciting. So in sixth grade, my friend Katie and I made the Grand Canyon out of pancakes. And so I think we had like over 100 pancakes, and we had plain pancakes and chocolate chip pancakes and then all these pancakes with different food coloring to represent the sediment. And we made the Colorado River out of red Jell-O, for those that are in the know about the Colorado River. And we had Sour Patch Kid hikers, and we also had Sour Patch Kid rafters in gummy lifesaver rafts. And it was so fun because we made it at Katie's house, and then the morning that we had to bring to school, I got to ride to school in her parents' Volvo, and we had to carefully load it in and then carefully bring it into school, and we got so many oohs and ahs when we presented it to everybody in class. It was so much fun and so awesome. So I was so excited for seventh grade to see what Katie and I would come up with next. But then, little did I know that the periodic table of elements would ruin everything. So in seventh grade, we were learning about the periodic table, and we were going through all the different elements, and the teacher would give us fun facts about each one. And when we got to phosphorus, my science teacher said, "Did you know that if you had enough urine and you boiled it hot enough and for long enough, you would get a solid piece of phosphorus?" And we're all like, and then immediately this kid in the class, Dana, she raises her hand. She's like, "Can I please do that for my project?" And then Katie raises her hand. It's like, "Oh my God, I want to do that for my project too." And I didn't raise my hand because I thought that was really disgusting. And then I'm like, is the school even going to let this happen? But the school said it was okay because it was one of those hippie, progressive private schools. And the school song lyrics were like, "Learn to explore and to hear and to see." So they said yes to this project, and immediately Dana and Katie were partners. And I was so sad because I really wanted to work with her, but I was not going to do a project like this. And so I decided that I was just going to work on my own because I didn't want another partner because I'm an only child. And I came up with my own project, which was about the sun. I decided that I was going to perform the song "Why Does the Sun Shine" by They Might Be Giants while dressed as a giant cardboard sun. And the cool thing about this project is it didn't really take much prep. I just had to memorize some lyrics, make a sun. So in the spare time when I did all that, I just decided I was going to spy on Dana and Katie while they got ready for their science project. And so not only are they allowed to boil urine, this principal has okayed them to collect all of the urine samples from the entire student body and teachers. So they were getting like 10 donations a day for weeks. People were just giving them jars and bottles, and they were being stored on the top shelf in our science class. And I really, like, it was so gross and I was so repulsed, but I also was so sad that I couldn't be a part of it, so I did decide to donate urine. And I remember going to the school bathroom. I think I had a little mason jar and I got my sample. And then they had the option of a label, like you could be anonymous, or if you wanted to, you could label your pee. And I was like, I wrote Hillary, like slapped the label on and stuck it up on the shelf. So this went on for a couple weeks. So they waited until the day before the presentation to do the boiling, and they waited until after school. They were allowed to do it in the science room. Now, I also stayed after school because my mother was the kindergarten teacher, and I decided to work on my sun costume in the kindergarten room because they had way better art supplies, and I also sort of wanted to see what was going to happen. So I'm in the kindergarten room, and I'm working on the sun, and all of a sudden, this like first wave of smell like comes down the hall. And at first, it just smells like seventh grade boys after gym class. And then I'm sitting there, like, doing more. And then, like, that smell combined with, like, a New York subway platform on the hottest day of summer mixed with cottage cheese. And the smell just, like, gets stronger and stronger. And, like, I should run away, but I end up leaving the kindergarten room and, like, walking down the hall towards the smell. And I get to the science room, and I don't go in all the way, but I hold my breath, and I peer through the door, and I see Dana and Katie. They're, like, at the stoves, and they have goggles on and surgical masks and big yellow rubber gloves, and they're, like, stirring these soup pots that are filled with urine, and they're, like, I could hear the bubbling sound and, like, see the steam of, like, everybody's urine mixed together. Like, the entire school was in these two soup pots. And I couldn't stay long enough to wait for them to boil it down. Like, I think I was only there for like a minute, and I held my breath before I was going to throw up, and I just left the school wondering if they were really going to be able to get all of that urine down to a tiny piece of phosphorus. And part of me, and this is where I felt so bad, I like secretly wanted them to fail. But the thing was, we went to a hippie progressive school, so they didn't even give us grades. Like, there wasn't even a reward or like a prize for the science project. But I still, like, I knew that if they couldn't do it, that maybe the sun project would be the best project. So like, I was secretly hoping for that to happen and then feeling so awful that I thought that. So we get to school the next day, we get into class, everyone has to present. It gets to be my turn, and I'm picture me. I'm dressed in a cardboard sun costume, and I just distribute lyrics to the class to encourage them to sing along. And I'm not going to sing for you now, but I will give you a sample.
Okay, so at this point, I pull out my phone and play Why Does the Sun Shine by They Might Be Giants. I wasn't holding my phone speaker up to the microphone close enough, and I played the track for way too long. So I'll spare you, and we can move on to the next part of the story.
Class was sort of getting to the end, and Katie and Dana still hadn't gone yet, and I could see them. They were, like, fidgeting nervously in their seats, and I'm thinking, like, I don't think they did it. I think they're, like, waiting for the class to run out of time so they don't have to present. But we got to them. We had enough time. The teacher calls them to come up. They get up. And first they're like, we're going to announce the title of our project. And they stand there and they say, How We Turned Pee into Pee. And the science teacher like lost it. He was laughing so hard because the symbol for phosphorus in the periodic table of elements is pee. He's like, this is a great pun. This is off to a great start. Everyone was so excited. And then Dana holds it up. And it's like the size of a raisin. And she passes it around, and it's just this thing. It's like this solid piece, and everyone's holding their hand, passing it around. And I do, everyone, like, no one doubted their authenticity, and I don't think I did either. I believe that they stayed at school until, I don't know, midnight, boiling pee, to get this actual solid piece of phosphorus. They did it. And the class is like oohing and aahing way louder than they did for the Grand Canyon made out of pancakes. But I was too. I was so excited. It made me so happy that they actually were able to do it. And if the school did give grades, I would totally have given them an A+. It was way better than the sun. And I think the best thing about them doing that whole project is that to this day, I know that you can take a whole lot of pee and turn it into a little bit of pee. Thank you.
Two more chapters remain in Millicent Wimbleberry, The Early Years. None of them have to do with science experiments or pets, but they are stories that take place closer to the age that I was when I was writing the book. I know that I can claim these stories as my own, even if they end up being a bit controversial. Is the word controversial enough of a cliffhanger for you, dear listener? I hope so. Rashomon is produced and hosted by me, Hillary Ray. Music in this episode and all season is by Liz DeLeese. Liz's band, Liz DeLeese, has a fairly new EP out now with Sheer Luck Records. Be sure to check it out and check the show notes for all of the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please share all of season 3 with a friend. You can text an episode or share about it on social media. Any help in spreading the word is much appreciated. All right, that's all for now. Yes, see you next week. Thank you for listening. This season of Rashomon is sponsored by my company, Tell Me a Story, a communication consulting and coaching business that teaches multi-passionate entrepreneurs, mission-driven leaders, and committed change makers how to use the art of storytelling as a powerful communication tool. To learn more about how I work with folks like you, visit tellmeastory.info and click the Work with Hillary tab.